For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Médecins Sans Frontières says that the Nigerian army has bombed a refugee camp in Ran, Nigeria, killing dozens and injuring more than 100 others. The Nigerian military claims it had mistakenly struck the camp while on a mission against the extremist group Boko Haram. FSN's Li Ling Tan has this report.
Médecins Sans Frontières has expressed shock at the bombing of a camp for internally displaced people in the northern Nigerian town of Ran. It says at least 50 people were killed and 120 injured. The medical aid agency says it is providing emergency assistance and stabilizing patients. It has asked authorities to help facilitate the evacuation of the wounded and added that its medical and surgical teams in nearby Cameroon and Chad are ready to treat patients. Nigeria's military has confirmed the accidental bombardment.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has described the authors of an unverified dossier on Donald Trump as worse than prostitutes. The report alleges that Russia had collected compromising material on the U.S. president-elect that could be used as leverage. Trump denies all the accusations made in the dossier, with Putin calling it an obvious hoax. William Denzelow reports from Moscow.
Speaking to reporters after a meeting with the Moldovan president, Vladimir Putin said that those who ordered this unverified dossier have no moral restraints, adding that those spreading false information about the US president-elect as part of a political battle are worse than prostitutes. The report was compiled by former MI6 operative Christopher Steele, who Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov described during his annual press conference Tuesday as a fugitive crook. Both Putin and Donald Trump have previously expressed wishes to improve bilateral ties, but the Russian president says that having never met Trump, he has no reason to either criticize or defend him.
This comes as Donald Trump is set to take the oath of office with the lowest approval ratings of any incoming American president, according to the latest ABC News Washington Post poll. He's so disliked that a growing number of Democratic congressmen are vowing to boycott the ceremony. Here's Priscilla Huff from Washington.
Just 40% of Americans approve of Donald Trump overall, and just 40% think he's handled the transition to the White House well. The new Washington Post ABC News poll highlights how many Americans have a lot of questions about Donald Trump, his choices for his cabinet, whether he and his family are adhering to ethics rules, and where he stands on Russia. Of course, the president-elect, in a tweet, claims the poll is rigged and it's phony. Donald Trump is definitely not popular with Democratic lawmakers. Nearly four dozen have announced they are boycotting the inauguration, usually the hottest ticket in Washington.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Rebecca Foster. Of course, by prostitutes, Vladimir Putin means that the press, or some members of the press anyway, will write, print anything and say anything if the price is right. I think he might have a point there. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. It is Tuesday. Is it the 17th? It is indeed the 17th of January already, 2017. It's going to be a busy old show. Lots to tell you.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, a lot was said last week about a former guest on this program, a woman called Melanie Shaw, whom I have an enormous amount of sympathy with. I wanted to leave it a few days or so to have a good hard look at what's been going on and to speak to one or two people about it. Melanie, you might remember, was sentenced to 2 years imprisonment at a secret court only a week or so ago. She blew the whistle on the systemic abuse of children at Beechwood Children's Home in Nottingham. Now, is she being targeted and punished for doing that, for speaking out? Well, Robert Greene thinks so. Robert is a former Nobel Peace Prize nominee and a ardent campaigner against child abuse. He's going to join the programme. I'll also be asking him about the Holly Gregg case. Robert was famously jailed, of course, in 2012 for allegedly harassing people connected to Holly's case. I had a chat with him today. Fascinating guy. Many listeners to this programme will know all about him and will know all about the Holly Gregg case, of course. But because we're, many of our listeners are based overseas, particularly in the United States, and they might not know about it, and it's timely. So we'll do that in an in-depth chat with Robert live on the programme later on in this hour. Okay, let's crack on then. At Richie Allen Show is the tweet, it's the place to tweet me, and it's richie@richieallen.co.uk. That's my email address. We are, of course, broadcasting live on davidike.com, Fab Radio 2, alternatecurrentradio.com, and the TuneIn app. Do bookmark davidike.com/headlines and do listen to the terrific programming brought to you by our broadcast partners. Right, going to talk shortly about Theresa May's Brexit speech today, where she outlined the bullet points of what she wants to achieve after all of this is said and done. But before that, if you are regularly checking in with davidike.com, you will know by now that the Stuttgart venue in Germany, which was due to host David's Worldwide Wake Up Tour talk in April, has pulled out. Now, it was only 3 months away. Lots of tickets had been sold. Media pressure and pressure from campaigners against anti-Semitism. That's the reason given for the venue pulling out. Pressure on the venue has resulted in them saying, we're not going to host the event. That's a shame, that. I won't spend too much time repeating what I said last night about the cutting-edge nature of what David is doing, him being out on his own. Thousands and thousands more people are coming to davidike.com to get a different take on geopolitical events and economic trends. The tour itself has been a massive success so far, and I'm, for one, not surprised that this has happened. I know he's not surprised that it's happened. Now, today, the campaign against anti-Semitism, in the guise of a man called Stephen Silverman, released this statement, and I'm going to read it to you word for word. Might take me a couple of minutes, but it's worth bearing with me. This is from Stephen Silverman of the campaign against anti-Semitism. I'm not going to do anything else now other than read this verbatim. Prior to Ike's Manchester performance, Campaign Against Anti-Semitism contacted the O2 Apollo as well as O2's PR department and its chief executive Mark Evans. There was no response until the day of the show, when O2's head of sponsorship replied to us, stating that the general manager for O2 Apollo has spoken to the show promoter to seek assurances about this show, which has been given, and the venue's police contact has been informed. Given the information provided by Campaign Against Anti-Semitism and Ike's track record to date, this is a wholly inadequate response. It is implausible that a 12-hour unscripted performance could have been thoroughly vetted independently of its promoter. O2's unscrupulous acquiescence to a venue they sponsor hosting a vehement anti-Semite is representable. David Icke preaches that a Jewish conspiracy controls the world, started both world wars, and that Hitler acted on valid information. Not only did the O2 Apollo allow Icke to address their packed venue for 12 hours, they profited from it. Campaign Against Anti-Semitism has written to Manchester City Council asking that they fine the venue an amount in excess of the profits from the evening and impose license conditions so that this does not happen again. We would like to hear from anybody who witnessed the performance. If you attended or know someone who did, please email investigations@antisemitism.uk. That's plural. investigations@antisemitism.uk. You may wish to contact O2's chief executive Mark Evans to let him know how you feel about the decision by the O2 Apollo, which O2 sponsors, to host a modern-day anti-Semitic hate preacher to address a sell-out audience for 12 hours. You may also want to contact Manchester City Council's licensing unit, and the email address is given, setting out how you feel about the venue hosting speakers of this nature. What's going on? Well, before I go any further, I did tweet Stephen Silverman today, and I invited him to come on the programme, and I since that, because I didn't get any response from him, I'm sure he saw the tweet, I did email him, basically inviting him on the programme to talk about anti-Semitism in general, why it is he feels that the presentation given by David Icke is in any way anti-Semitic, and to talk about Theresa May's attempts to define it legally, and to talk about racism in general. I did state clearly to Silverman that, like everybody else who's come on the programme, he would be respected, treated fairly, and given time to formulate his ideas and to express himself. I have yet to hear from him or anybody from that organisation. But to be fair to them, I only tweeted him a couple of hours ago, and the email was only sent about 30-35 minutes ago. Now, Stephen Silverman, according to the website of antisemitism.uk, is a former IT and business consultant who specialised in effecting cultural change and improved business performance within multinational corporations. Back in 2014, he became increasingly concerned by something he never expected to see in Britain, a surge in openly expressed hatred towards the Jewish community on the streets, on social media, and even in certain branches of political discourse. Alarmed by this, and alarmed by anti-Semitism becoming normalised in public life, he joined a campaign against anti-Semitism back in 2015. It's interesting to note they're not here to speak tonight, but the terrific Stephen Englander, who is an accountant and is heavily involved with Beyond Vision Television. Stephen is Jewish, very prominent member of the Jewish community in Manchester, in North Manchester. And completely aside from this, over a week ago, I asked Stephen and I asked Andrew, who's my accountant, the accountant for the Richie Allen Show, also a Jewish man and very active in the Jewish community. I asked them even, was there a surge in openly expressed hatred towards Jews? Was anti-Semitism on the rise? And both of them said to a man, absolutely not. They never experienced it. In fact, I was going to invite Stephen to come on the programme. But that's only two people. That doesn't mean that Stephen Silverman is wrong. Where is it all coming from, though? Before I go into that briefly, I would like you, if you went to the event on Saturday, to email Mr. Silverman at the email address that he's given, investigations@antisemitism.uk, and give a completely uncorrupted and a completely uninfluenced even appraisal of what you saw on the day. Good, bad or indifferent, do email investigations@antisemitism.uk and tell Stephen Silverman, that's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, what you thought happened on the day, and address his claims that anti-Semitism was, made up any part of the presentation. I, for one, can't understand why this guy Silverman wouldn't attend the event himself. That's question number one I would ask him, if and when he chooses to take up my offer and come on the programme. I'd say, Stephen, why didn't you go to it? And have you ever read one of David Icke's books? Have you ever spent any time in his company? Have you ever attended an event like the one we saw on Saturday, where anti-Semitism couldn't have been any further away from what was discussed on the day? So what's going on then? Well, I'll tell you what I think is going on. Why is this happening to David Icke right now? To try and demonstrate it, I'm going to do what I always do. I'm going to fall back on a couple of audio clips. Now, back in the spring of last year, David Icke was invited onto the BBC Late Night Politics programme with Andrew Neil and Michael Portillo and other guests. They brought David on and undoubtedly thought they'd poke a bit of fun at him. Didn't go very well for them, for the producers. This was last spring. Andrew Neil, first of all, asks David Icke to name for him a conspiracy.
Ironically, we've had George Osborne this week trying to ridicule conspiracies involving the EU by likening them to believing in the Loch Ness Monster. And in the same week, we've had the Daily Mail exposing the Prime Minister for conspiring, in effect, with big business to frighten the public into staying in the EU, while publicly to Parliament as well, saying that he would come out if the negotiations, renegotiations didn't work. That's a conspiracy.
Is that a conspiracy or is it just politicians doing the time-honoured thing of being less than honest with us?
Well, if you're telling the public that you will have the option of coming out if you do not renegotiate with the EU the way you want, and you then you don't do that, and at the same time you're telling the public and Parliament that, you are working with big business behind the scenes already to frighten the public into staying in, even though your renegotiation's not finished. That is a conspiracy to mislead the public.
Now, as an avid consumer of mainstream media and as an expert in media production, and I am, it's the only thing I'll declare myself to be an expert in, I know full well that David Icke was the only commentator across the BBC's 20-plus radio stations, that's nationally, and 50 regional stations and television stations, to point out that the Prime Minister of the country should have been forced to resign immediately for telling people, listen, don't worry, I'm going to get the best deal, and if we don't, I'm going to support coming out. Well, at the same time, he was lying through his teeth and was doing deals with big business to scare people into acquiescing to the whole we must stay in the European Union nonsense. Okay? This is very important, right? So Neil then tried a bit of sarcasm, smugly asking David, what other conspiracies should we be worried about? Now remember, having been given a conspiracy by Neil, Neil said, isn't that just a time-honoured tradition of politicians being less than honest with us, when he should have said, well, we'll put it to Cameron, and, you know, if there's no explanation for this, well, we'll be asking Cameron to consider his position. So he smugly asks David, what other conspiracies should we be worried about? Listen.
What other conspiracies should we worry about?
Well, what we're looking at all the time are conspiracy after conspiracy coming to light, while the idea of conspiracy and the very word conspiracy is demonised. For instance, we have a situation with this Chilcot inquiry where we're going to see, indeed the information has already come out, that the Prime Minister of the time, Tony Blair and George Bush and the administrations, lied to us to justify an invasion of Iraq. And that is a conspiracy that has cost the lives of staggering numbers of people and created an ongoing catastrophe that's still going on. And let's not forget this. The very same people, not just the same agencies, the same people that told us there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq when they knew they weren't, those very same people gave us the official story of 9/11. And what the mainstream media
so was,
is doing...
Was 9/11 a conspiracy?
Of course it was.
Who was behind it?
Well, what was behind it was...
No, who was behind it?
Well, again, in the time we've got here, it's very difficult. But there is a network that works through government agencies, through organisations like the CIA, etc., to push an agenda on the world, which is unfolding by the day. My books in the 1990s laid out what this agenda was, and those books are now being read on the television news in changes in society and laws coming in.
Okay.
And the thing is, this is the point, the mainstream media has accepted that those characters, those same characters, lied about Iraq, but will not question in any way the same people's version of 9/11. They're journalists, it's their job.
Now, Neil then threw in the royal family lizard question, which was answered rationally by David. David said there's a massive backstory, there's historical evidence about these entities, and David said the throwaway line about lizards is silly. Now, I'm going somewhere with this. I'll get to it in a second. Michael Portillo, former Conservative MP, was on the same show, sitting opposite David, and Portillo felt like throwing in his tuppence worth.
Yes, I know people put a lot of work into conspiracy theories, but I still think they're actually intellectually lazy. I think, you know, people just don't want to get their head around the way things really work. That having been said, I mean, let me say firstly that, you know, a lot of people are gullible about conspiracies. I mean, I think the police were extremely gullible about the Downing Street paedophile ring, as it turns out. And on the other hand, I'll just end my comment with this point. There clearly was a conspiracy over Hillsborough. And over 28 years or whatever it was, people denied there was a conspiracy, but there was.
My last book before the present one is 1,000 pages. Have you read any of my books?
No, I haven't.
How do you know that it's intellectually lazy?
I wasn't talking about you, actually.
You were talking about me, because that's what I do.
Yeah, checkmate. They never have him back on the programme. What's the context you're thinking? Well, not in that interview and in a previous interview David gave to BBC Wolverhampton Radio, anti-Semitism never came up. So what's the context? I can hear the gears of your brain grinding away there. This is the context. Why are they going after him now? Because I've said time and time again, he's out on his own now. His contemporaries have become lazy, hopeless, mainstream light, compromised, or they're following the money. 2 years previously, Andrew Neil, the guy speaking with David there, interviewed Alex Jones. This is how it went.
You let him speak now.
Well, sure. Alex, I saw one of your ministers say this, though.
No, Alex,
you
let I'm him here.
Speak.
I'm,
There's tyranny.
No, shut up.
I'm here to testify that your head was not cut off. The problem is conspiracy theories like this are believed in...
Hey, listen, I'm here to warn people. You keep telling me to shut up. This isn't a game. Okay, our government in the U.S. is building FEMA camps. We have an NDAA where they disappear people now. You have this arrest for public safety, life in prison.
You are the worst person I've ever interviewed.
No, it's basically off with their heads, disappear
them, David, thank
them,
you for
away.
Being with us.
Infowars.com, liberty is rising.
You're watching the
liberty
Sunday Politics.
Rising.
We have an idiot
freedom
on the program today.
Stop. You
coming
will not
up
stop
in just
freedom.
20 minutes.
You will not stop the republic. Humanity is awakening. Infowars.com. No. You guys are...
Now, I'm not in any way suggesting that Andrew Neil covered himself in glory there or the BBC production team. But this is the context. You see, when Alex Jones and others are not promoting Trump these days and blaming the world's problems on radical Islam, they're saying things like Hillary has a smell of sulfur coming from her and that homosexuals the world over are trying to teach children degrading sex acts like fisting. The forces behind the agenda we talk about couldn't give less of a damn about people like Alex Jones. He's entertainment. He's certainly not cutting edge and is a threat to nobody. Like so many of these other contemporaries I mentioned that have fallen by the wayside. You see, David Icke terrifies these people because he's calm, he's rational, he's a marvellous speaker, he's compassionate. And nobody has ever, as I said yesterday, juxtaposed the esoteric nature of this, the metaphysical relationship to what's gone on thousands of years ago with the events of today, and they're terrified of it. Now, ironically, the campaign against anti-Semitism have put out a video clip that they say, in fact, they say supports everything that they claim about David Icke being anti-Semitism when he talks about Zionism. Now, in the interest of time, because I've played the clip several times, I'm not going to play it here, but I'm going to say exactly what David says in the clip, word for word. In the clip now that the campaign against anti-Semitism say, is there evidence that David is in some way anti-Semitic? David says that Zionism, the Jewish people are as much victims of it as anybody else, and that Jewish people don't benefit from it. David claims in the clip put out by the campaign against anti-Semitism that Zionists claim to have the interests of Israelis at the heart of their agenda. In fact, they don't. He says clearly it's a secret society, a political ideology, and you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. And then he goes on to say that Judaism as a religion couldn't be any further from the Zionist ideology and philosophy. Staggering, really. The amount of time spent on Saturday talking about the folly of racism and where it comes from. All of this stuff. So where is it coming from? Chatting briefly with David over the last couple of days, David said to me, look, there's a little bit of a timeline which is interesting. In the months in advance of the event at the Apollo Theatre in Manchester, there wasn't a dicky bird, not a whisper from anybody about anything, with any problem at all about David speaking. But on Monday last, not just 2 days ago, but the previous Monday before the event, The Guardian asked for an interview in Manchester. David turned them down. On Tuesday, Channel 4 News asked him for an interview to report on the event, and David said OK. But less than a day after Channel 4 News came in, Stephen Silverman contacted the venue saying, "We have been told David Icke is speaking there." At that point, David said to Channel 4 News, "I'd rather not do it." David is very honest, and he said, "Well, look, I can't prove cause and effect here, but it's an incredible coincidence, that sequence of events. It's been a long, long, long time, way before I began speaking with David, that anybody threw the accusation of anti-Semitism against him, because it's ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous." And well-known Jewish celebrities in this country, including Louis Theroux and others, have said, "No, when David says Zionist, he means Zionist, and when David means or says reptilian entity, he means reptilian entity. So what's going on?" I put it to you again. What's going on is that while all of these heavyweights in the so-called alternative media are disappearing up their own arse, or disappearing entirely, going mainstream light, or backing major campaigns and politicians, this man stands now on his own. And there's never been a better speaker, a better communicator, a more rational, lucid thinker putting this information together. And it's a critical time for these people, as more and more people, misguided of course, but still, it's a good thing, throwing their lot in behind Trump because they're pissed off, more and more people are looking towards David Icke specifically. Can't have that. So we'll start trouble like this. I doubt very much Manchester City Council or anybody else, and I hope I'm not proved wrong, will take seriously the complaint by the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. That being said, I reiterate again tonight that they are welcome to come on this programme and have a friendly, open, robust, if they want, discussion about what constitutes anti-Semitism and why it is they feel that they should be bothering the O2, asking for them to be fined based on nothing. So I've invited Stephen Silverman on. If there's any response from him, you'll be the first to hear it. 27 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. Remember that email address again, investigations, plural, investigations@antisemitism.uk. Email Mr. Silverman. He's asking for people to give their accounts of David's performance on Saturday. I would ask you, please, regardless of what you think, one way or another, please be polite and be decent in your correspondence with him, as you would be with anybody else. Okay? Good stuff. Right, moving on to a couple of big stories today. I'm coming to Theresa May in a minute. I want to talk a little bit about Udo Ulfkotter. Now, he died last week. I didn't know this until a day or so ago. David was telling me about it. He died on January 13th. He was a journalist who spoke out about mainstream and fake news. He has reportedly died from a heart attack. He was once an editor at the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Now, Ulfkotter famously published a book explaining how the CIA had a big hand on every, and had control even on every significant journalist in Europe, which gave Washington control over European opinion and reduced knowledge of and opposition to Washington's control over European heads of state. Now, Ulfkotter recently went on public TV, he went to RT actually, stating he was forced to publish the works of intelligence agents under his own byline, adding that non-compliance with these orders would have resulted in him losing his job. We reached out to him when he published the book and invited him on for an interview a couple of times. We never heard from him, sadly. And of course, we're not going to now, sadly, as well. Here he is on RT talking about what we just described.
And I'm going to stand up and say it is not right what I have done in the past to manipulate people, to make propaganda against Russia, and it is not right what my colleagues do and have done in the past, because they are bribed to betray the people, not only in Germany, all over Europe. The reason writing this book was that I I am very fearful of a new war in Europe, and I don't like to have this situation again, because war is never coming from itself. There is always people behind it to push for war. And this is not only politicians, this is journalists too. And I just have written in the book how we have betrayed in the past our readers just to push for war, and because I don't want this anymore. I'm fed up with this propaganda. We live in a banana republic and not in a democratic country where we have press freedom, where we have human rights. When we, if you see the German media, especially my colleagues who day by day write against the Russians, who are in transatlantic organizations and who are supported by the United States to do so, well, people like me, I became honorary citizen of the state of Oklahoma in the United States. Just why? Just because I write pro-American. I wrote pro-American. I was supported by the Central Intelligence Agency, by the CIA. Why? Because I should be pro-American. I'm fed up with it. I don't want to do it anymore.
That was Udo Ulfkott speaking to RT a year and a half or so ago. He's not around anymore. A number of you have been speculating today that, you know, you wonder about his death. You know, did he die as is being reported, or was he punished for saying what he said? You know, we know that these agencies do kill people who try and expose them. The truth is, we'll never know. You know, I'm sure there will be those in the independent media doing what they do and claiming as fact that he was murdered, when in fact we don't know. Is it possible? You're damn right it is. 29 minutes to the top of the hour. Don't forget, coming up shortly, Robert Greene, the former Nobel Peace Prize nominee and a campaigner against child abuse. It's going to be very interesting. That'll be coming up in about 15 minutes' time. Now, Theresa May has said the UK cannot possibly remain within the European single market. Staying in it would mean not leaving the European Union at all. But she promised to push for the freest possible trade with Europe and to sign new deals with others around the world. She also announced Parliament would get to vote on the final deal agreed between the UK and the EU. That's very important. I'll return to that shortly. May used her much anticipated speech to announce her priorities for Brexit negotiations, including maintaining the common travel area between the UK and the Irish Republic, and control of migration between the UK and the EU. Here are the main points given by May herself.
We are leaving the European Union, but we are not leaving Europe. And that is why we seek a new and equal partnership between an independent, self-governing global Britain and our friends and allies in the EU. Not partial membership of the European Union, associate membership of the European Union, or anything that leaves us half in, half out. We do not seek to adopt a model already enjoyed by other countries. We do not seek to hold on to bits of membership as we leave. No, the United Kingdom is leaving the European Union, and my job is to get the right deal for Britain as we do. We want to buy your goods and services, sell you ours, trade with you as freely as possible, and work with one another to make sure we are all safer, more secure, and more prosperous through continued friendship. You will still be welcome in this country, as we hope our citizens will be welcome in yours. At a time when together we face a serious threat from our enemies, Britain's unique intelligence capabilities will continue to help to keep people in Europe safe from terrorism. I can confirm today that the government will put the final deal that is agreed between the UK and the EU to a vote in both Houses of Parliament before it comes into force.
And you're supposed to believe that's indicative of democracy. It isn't. Putting it before Parliament, Labour, the SNPs, the few Lib Dems, and of course rebels within their own party could very well scupper it. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn had this to say on what May had to say.
She has said leave the single market, then at the same time says she wants to have access to the single market. I'm not quite sure how that's going to go down in Europe. I think we have to have a deal that ensures we have access to the market, we have British jobs dependent on that market. That's what we'll be pushing for. Whether it's specifically this form of single market? I don't know. She seems to be wanting to have a cake and eat it.
You know, my New Year's resolution for 2017, not that I believe in New Year's resolutions, was not to resort to name-calling. Not that I do it very often, but to try and avoid it. Look, I was going to say, isn't he useless, Corbyn? Of course he's not useless. He's a human being. He deserves better than that. But he's a hypocrite. This is the guy who railed against the tyranny of the EU from the back benches. And now he hasn't got the cojones to stand up to the warmongering Blairites. He becomes more and more insignificant and out of touch with reality on a daily basis. Speaking of that, here's the Liberal Democrat leader, Tim Farron.
Seems to be the extreme version of Brexit that Theresa May was briefing in advance of this speech. And that is incredibly disappointing for anybody who thinks democracy matters, because what she has done is taken the views of 51.9% of the people who voted to leave the European Union last June and assume they all meant the same as Nigel Farage and assume they wanted an extreme Brexit that was not on the ballot paper. So this is a theft of democracy as well as an attack on our economy. And to decide to do this without seeking the will and the opinion of the British people at the end of it is all the more offensive. What she did say, the only two really substantial things she said in the speech was, one, that she was going for the hard Brexit and ripping us out of the single market. The other was that Parliament would get a vote on the deal at the end of all this, which really is saying that politicians can have a bit of democracy at the end of this process, but the people can't.
What a bull spitter. Taking May's speech word for word, she did say she'd put a vote to Parliament, right? More lies from Farron. People didn't vote to leave on hard Brexit terms. They keep saying hard Brexit. They keep saying people didn't know as they'd get into this leaving the single market. They didn't understand that. People had no idea what was going on.
The British public would be voting if we leave, would be to leave the EU and leave the single market.
Should we come out the single market?
I think that is almost certainly would be the case, yes.
Do you want us to stay inside the single market, yes or no?
No, we should be outside the single market.
I had Michael Gove in that chair and I said, after Brexit, will we be in the European single market, yes or no? And he said, no.
And he was right.
So we won't be in the European single
Michael,
market.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'd be out of the single market. That's the reality. Britain would be quitting the single market.
Yeah, I know I've played you that particular clip before, but it bears repeating, doesn't it? People knew what they were voting for. People knew what they were voting for. Now, Isabel Oakeshott is a columnist with the Daily Mail, and she has a very strong opinion on the term hard Brexit and where that term came from. I like the cut of her jib. Have a listen to this.
I think it was a kind of hostile rebranding exercise. It was an attempt to use the language of Brexit to try to clutch victory from the jaws of defeat, to try to frighten people into thinking that hard Brexit was something that they hadn't voted for. And in fact, soft Brexit, I think, for most people that backed Brexit, is a kind of synthetic Brexit, is not real Brexit. And for me, all this terminology, but particularly the two simple phrases that we started out with, hard Brexit and soft Brexit, is a nonsense. Brexit is Brexit, as Theresa May has said.
But are we going to get Brexit? Or are, as I'm beginning to think more and more, are we going to get a lot of nonsense, a lot of obfuscation, a lot of red tape, and eventually the spectre of a second referendum? That's where I think we're going. If people allow it happen, it is exactly, what is the time exactly? My clock. I'm always obscuring my clock. It's exactly 21 minutes to the top of the hour. This is the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2, Alternate Current Radio, and the TuneIn app. Here's a very quick break. Back with plenty more in a minute.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Join in tonight's discussion by tweeting at Richie Allen Show now.
Yes, indeed. Or you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk telling you what you're thinking. A lot of comment on Twitter from people who did go to see David on Saturday. Peter John McCann tweets, I don't think I've heard from you, Peter, previously. Nice to hear from you today. David devoted a full segment of the show to equality, how the human body is a pearly, a vehicle to our unique consciousness. That's just one of many comments like that coming into the program. Remember, email investigations@antisemitism.uk and do so as an adult and give an account of your time at the O2 Apollo Theatre on Saturday. And do not allow anybody, me or anybody else, influence that email. You say it as you see it, is how I would do it, okay? Let him know. And as I said, if you go to our Twitter account, you will see, if you go to Twitter and put Richie Allen Show, all one word in, you'll see what plenty of people are saying there about David. People who went to the event, all of them saying the same thing. Daniel Ford as well, and many others who were at the event on Saturday. And if you're going to see David at the Helix on Saturday in Ireland, what a fantastic day that will be. That's this Saturday, the 21st of January, a red letter day, of course, in Irish history. Right, it's time to get our guest on. Our only guest, Robert Green, will be standing by to chat to us. He is in Warrington, which is not a million miles away from here. So while I dial him up, I've got some Bob Seger for you. I like a bit of Bob Seger. It's been a while since I played Bob Seger on the radio. It is 18 minutes to the top of the hour of the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Keep those tweets coming in. Lots of questions you will have about Melanie Shaw and Holly Gregg. Robert Green will answer them over the next hour or hour and a half. Back in three.
A gypsy wind is blowing warm tonight. The sky is starlit and the time is right. And still you're telling me you have to go. Before you leave, there's something you should know. Yeah, something you should know, babe. I've seen you smiling in the summer sun. I've seen your long hair flying when you run. I've made my mind up that it's meant to be. Someday later.
15 minutes to the top of the hour. Bob Seger, you'll accompany me on the Richie Allen Show. Cutting that music very quickly. As an old friend of mine used to say on the radio many years ago, it's 15 minutes to the top of the hour. If you've got someplace to be, you've still got time. To serious matters then. You might remember a couple of years ago on the programme, not long after the programme began, I interviewed a couple of times a woman called Melanie Shaw. Now, Melanie came on the programme to talk about her experiences at Beechwood Children's Home in Nottingham. It was harrowing stuff. She was abused as a child at home and was then abused again when she was in the care of this Beechwood Children's Home, which was, at that time, run by Nottingham County Council. It's believed by, in my opinion, some very credible people and very credible researchers that because she blew the whistle on this and named names and threw the spotlight on those doing it and played a big part in Operation Daybreak, which she did because it was her testimony to the police that got Operation Daybreak underway. It's the belief of a lot of people that she's being persecuted for having the courage and, in their opinion, I suppose, the temerity to come out against this. The interview I did with her two and a quarter, I suppose, years ago, is on YouTube, on her YouTube channel, if later on you want to have a listen to it. Now, we learned last week that she was sentenced to 2 years in prison. And it's bizarre because we can't determine why she was sentenced to 2 years in prison, why the 11 months she'd been in prison on remand hadn't been deducted from her sentence, what's going on, because it was all in a secret court. Now, to talk about this, because he's on top of the case, he's followed it diligently. He's a friend of Melanie's. And he's got a great history himself. He is a former Nobel Peace Prize nominee, as I mentioned earlier on, but he's also been a long-time campaigner against child abuse. And, of course, as I mentioned earlier on, with the Holly Gregg case, he found himself incarcerated for asking questions, and that was back in 2012. And we will talk about that as well, because we have plenty of time. Lots of time and no pressure. That should be our tagline. Let's welcome to the programme for the first time. It's a pleasure to welcome him, Robert Green. Robert, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much, Richie. And thank you very much for being so kind as to invite me on today. It's a great pleasure. And I'd just like to thank those people, perhaps just before I forget, I'm always forgetting to thank people that I should thank. You and I, of course, were with David Icke on Saturday in Manchester. And I'd just like to say, if you're listening, any of those very kind people who came up to me when I was there and offered their support and said they'd been supporting the Holly Gregg case for many years, thank you very much indeed for your very kind remarks. I do appreciate all the support that you've given. You've been very loyal and very good, so thank you. So there we are. There's my little thank you.
Well, very, very nice of you to say that, and I'm sure those people you bumped into will appreciate that. It is kind of strange that you've not been on with us over the last couple of years, but I suppose all the better you're on now.
Yes, there's a lot going on, Richie, and I have to say you really described the situation with Melanie very well indeed. I can't really add to that. I think it is a terrible thing that's going on here, irrespective of what may or may not have happened, what Melanie may or may not have done. I think the way she's being treated now is absolutely inhumane. It sounds to me something, and I'm not exaggerating, something that the way people might have been treated in Nazi Germany or under the Stasi. It seems totally out of out of character of how people are treated in prisons in this country. It seems very serious to me, and the secrecy is the worst element. That by all accounts, Melanie is not allowed to make connections with people, independent witnesses. We've got secret courts. She's apparently having mail withheld. So the way she's being treated is just appalling by all accounts. And it would seem that the state is taking action against Melanie because she's been prepared to speak out. And although, again, it's not really my case, although I've spoken to Melanie in the past, as Richie alluded to, the difficulty there is that she really is so isolated and nobody really knows what has happened and nobody knows why she's been treated in the way that she does. But could it be that she has been named a few people who the authorities would prefer not to be named?
And it's hard not to come to that conclusion, isn't it? I mean, we try to be objective, and I've watched a lot of your videos, and to your credit, Robert, you come at it from a very, I would describe it, a very academic, way. I that's what I get from you anyway, and that's why I was so anxious to get you on this programme. Can you tell our listeners what you know about Beechwood Children's Home in Nottingham? What went on there? The sorts of things that Melanie was talking about.
Yes, I don't claim to be able to speak with any great authority on this case, but what I understand is that Beechwood and other children's homes in the area, within those care homes, there was a systematic sexual abuse of many children. And this is what makes the way in which Melanie's being treated even more strange, because unlike some of the other cases, including the Holly Gregg case, it isn't just one person coming forward here. Many children who were in the homes have come forward, and I understand that the Nottingham Council or Nottinghamshire Council have paid out a lot of these people from public funds because of the way they were treated as victims of this abuse. So Melanie's not on her own. She's speaking, she's making the same kind of allegations in the same kind of places that many other people have. So it's impossible to really discredit Melanie, because she's only saying the same things that many other victims have said, and those victims have been believed. So I think it's a complete mystery. That's really basically the basis of all this. Obviously, because of the sheer scale, there have been people who have been saying that the number of people abused in the Nottingham area, both in the city and perhaps in the surrounding areas in Nottinghamshire, may well come up to the sort of figure that we've heard about in Rotherham, as far as victims are concerned. So perhaps the authorities really want to make an example of Melanie to stop more people coming forward. I don't know the answer. But obviously the authorities are not acting in an open or transparent way, and they do seem to be bringing suspicion upon themselves. We may be wrong in all this. I may not be right in my suspicions, but why are they being so secretive about this? That is the question.
No, you're right. The JFK quote was mentioned by a guest last night. Secrecy is repugnant in a free society. I just want to back up what you're saying there. We can't forget that the last time I spoke with Melanie, she'd been sentenced to time in Peterborough prison for allegedly setting fire to a neighbour's shed. Now, what staggered me, because I'm experienced enough over the years, I've interviewed so many different people, that when somebody tells you something, you take it with a pinch of salt. So when Melanie said to me, there's not even any evidence that a shed was burned down, I took it with a pinch of salt, only to find out that there was never any report made to the fire services in the area. There was no complaint made. They never were called out to any such fire. And, she was banged up for that. And I knew then that somebody had it in for this woman.
Yes, yes. I heard the same thing, Richie. That's sort of how I understood the situation. In fact, again, when she was in Peterborough at the Sodexo private prison there, she received, it seems, very similar kind of treatment to what is reported she is suffering from at Foston Hall at the moment, HMP Foston Hall, where she is at the moment, which is in Derbyshire, not too far from the Staffordshire border. And when she was, as I say, was following the case, as many of you were and many other people were, and I heard about that she had a very bad injury on her leg that she claimed was being untreated. And a lot of pressure was put on various people in the government to try and do something about this, including Karen Bradley, who was the Minister for Preventing Abuse and Exploitation at the time. But nothing happened there. And in fact, I got in touch with Sarah Champion, the Labour MP, who has been very helpful in the Rotherham area. It was her constituency where all these terrible things happened to young girls there. And Sarah was very helpful. And in very short order, I got a letter from the Home Office. And in it said, it's 24th of September 2015, and in it said, I'm very sorry to hear about the case of Melanie Shaw and the sexual abuse she suffered as a child. Child sexual abuse is a reprehensible crime no matter when or where it occurs. The government is committed to keeping children and young people safe from all forms of abuse. We are clear that if child abuse takes place, it must be thoroughly and properly investigated and those responsible brought to justice. Yes, you said that, Home Office. I've got the letter in front of me here. So why aren't you looking into this and looking into Melanie's allegations seriously? Well, that's a question. But that comes from the Home Office directly. I'd also made an effort then when I heard about Melanie's difficulties and health problems. It seemed quite definite that she was not being dealt with properly. So I actually rang the Home Secretary's office. That was Theresa May at the time. And I told them I obviously didn't get a chance to speak to the Home Secretary, but one of the staff. And I explained that I'd been told about this situation in the Sodexo prison in Peterborough, and the treatment of this particular particular inmate. And I said that I understood that her health may be in danger. And I made the point then that I said, if any harm befalls this young lady, if she's taken ill, or if she were to die, which was possible based on the information I've been given, that I would personally see that the Home Secretary would be held responsible for that, having told them about this, if the allegations are true. As it happens, in very short order, Melanie became treated much, much better indeed. But that's just a point I'd like to make for all the people who are concerned about people who are being treated badly, especially if they're incarcerated. If you learn about not only Melanie but any other cases, please don't be afraid to contact the Home Office straight away and give them the same kind of message that I gave them over Melanie.
That's very important. Work. That's very important that, you know, weight of numbers. I would urge our listeners to email the Home Office and ask about the whereabouts and the health and the condition of Melanie. And, you know, I'm glad you mentioned, you know, Melanie obviously has some problems. Look,
Well, who wouldn't?
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Sexual abuse that Absolutely. She suffered as a child. How could you possibly not have problems in later life when those awful things have happened to you in your formative years?
Do you know what, Robert? I have no evidence to support this, and it's probably something I wouldn't do if I was on mainstream media, but I'm going to do it anyway. I wouldn't be surprised, because she has issues. I wasn't sexually abused, but I was badly physically abused as a youngster, and I acted out a lot into my late teens. You know, I properly acted out, and I was a problem. I never hurt anybody, but I acted out and I caused people embarrassment and problems. And I could see a situation where the enemies of Melanie, knowing what she's going through and her mental condition, would deliberately engineer her into situations where she might say something or she might lash out in order to whip out the handcuffs. There you go, love. Bang, you're caught. You're arrested under such and such a section of such and such a law. And then, you know, and that's why she spent so much time in prison over the last few years. It staggers me, and it's horrible to think this woman has been sentenced to jail for 2 years. And as of today, the 17th of January, Robert, nobody knows for what.
No, that is
It's staggering, isn't it?
The secrecy, even the court case was actually, they did everything to cover it up so that nobody could be there, no press, no members of the public could know what was going on. And Melanie, of course, has been isolated from the outside world. We understand, we have a reason to understand that her mail has been intercepted. And for that reason, some of you, perhaps listeners, may know this already, but we've decided, several of us who have been trying to help Melanie, decided the very best way of trying to make sure that she gets her mail is to route it via her MP, Chris Leslie. That's he's a man, Leslie, Chris Leslie, and his address, it's on the net, you can find it yourself anyway, but I will just tell you verbally, it's 12 Regent Street, Nottingham, NG1 5BQ. And I've done this already. I've sent a letter to Melanie and I've sent a covering letter to Mr. Leslie to tell him about the situation and the fact that it sounds suspiciously like torture in the internationally accepted way of defining how torture is. And I've suggested that he takes immediate action to protect his constituent. And I understand a former employee. I think she actually worked for him. And I think there's a rather nice picture of Melanie and Mr. Leslie chatting amicably together. So, Mr. Leslie, if you're listening, or if any of your staff are listening, or any of your constituents in the Nottingham area, I think it's time that you did something about your constituent and help to protect her from the terrible treatment that she appears to be receiving at the moment, and it is not for the first time.
Robert, thanks. We're going to leave that. It's at Chris Leslie MP on Twitter as well, at Chris Leslie. And just to reiterate what Robert already told you, and I'm sure you understand, you understood him perfectly. He's got a great speaking voice. But I'm going to do it again anyway. 12 Regent Street, Nottingham, November Golf 1, NG1, 5B for Bravo, Q for... whatever, Quincy, Quince, whatever. So NG1 5BQ. I don't know my phonetic alphabet.
I think it's Quebec, I think.
It is Quebec. Well done. No, you're spot on.
I think everyone's got the message now.
They have, mate. I'll tell you what we're going to do, Robert. We're going to take a very, very quick break, 90 seconds. And when we come back, I'm going to turn my microphone off and I'm going to ask you to tell your story and the Holly Gregg story as if you're telling it for the first time and nobody ever heard it, because it's massive, right?
Actually, that would take me about 5 hours.
You can condense it. We've got an hour.
Not that long, but no, I've tried to be as brief as I possibly can.
I've heard you do it
talk
before.
Talk about the relative, what people need to do at this time if they're able to do so.
We will do. Right, stand by then. Thanks, Robert. Robert's going to stay with us. He's not going anywhere. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, and I know this because I've had emails from people today saying, I'm glad you're covering the Holly Gregg situation, Richie, because I don't know very much about it. Of course, people in the UK who listen to this programme, they know all about Robert. They've seen his story with respect to what happened to him when he was investigating Holly Gregg. They've come through davidicke.com. David reported on Robert and all of that. So in the UK, yes, but outside the UK, a lot of people are sketchy about it, and this is a very important story. So very quick break, back with plenty more on The Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
And you're very welcome back. It's 4 minutes past the hour. The Nobel Peace Prize nominee a couple of years ago, Robert Greene, is on the line, a campaigner against child abuse. We've spoken about Melanie Shaw. I've just tweeted Chris Leslie's Twitter handle. It's at Chris Leslie MP, and I've directed you, if you want to ask questions about Melanie's well-being, direct them to Chris. And again, like I said earlier on, and don't think I'm in any way lecturing here, be polite. Always be polite and be civil when you're dealing with anybody, no matter who it is. So it's Chris Leslie there. Robert, thanks for staying with us. Good to have you on the programme. I want to hear about, I'd love to hear about Holly Gregg. Who is Holly Gregg and how did you come to hear about her?
Well, Holly Gregg has a lady of extraordinary courage, staggering bravery. If ever there was a woman of the year in the UK, I think Holly Gregg should be in the running. She suffers from Down syndrome, but she's a competent person. She's got a great sense of humour and an incredibly, I can't really find the words to describe properly, but she's got a tremendous personality. As a lot of people who do have Down syndrome have, you know, a lot of people say, oh, that's a really very unfortunate, all the rest of it. But many of them have wonderful gifts that perhaps the rest of us can only marvel at. And Holly Gregg is one of those people. I first became involved, although I live in England, I was involved when I was invited up to Scotland to talk about a case I'd been dealing with earlier involving the corruption in the travel and airline industries and involving certain senior officers in the Metropolitan Police and a senior and a very big law firm in London. And ITV did a programme about it. Only scratching the surface, but a lot of people watched it. And as a result of that, I was invited up to Scotland to talk about that, to Edinburgh. After I'd given my talk, the chairman and a few of his colleagues asked me if I could do anything at all about a case in Scotland. And I was told it was one of the most horrific cases that one could imagine, and it concerned the multiple rape of a disabled girl from Aberdeen, Holly Gregg. Now, to begin with, of course, I had no experience of this type of thing at all. I was rather like, I think, most of the people that I've been talking to or in the early days talked to, in that they found the abuse of children so horrific that they really didn't want to hear about it. And I must admit, I was one of those people before I became involved in this. But when you come to realise about the horrors of what these children are suffering, it is not right, not morally right, to stand back and say, oh, it's not my child, I don't want to hear about that, it's awful, it's horrible, I don't want to hear it. Well, if you don't want to hear about it, what do you think it's like for the victim, how they must feel? But anyway, as a result of that, to cut a long story short, despite the fact I knew nothing about this, I'd never been to Aberdeen in my life where the offences were alleged to have taken place. But I was assured that Holly's mother, Anne, had actually been assiduous in keeping all kinds of documents. She tried very hard to seek justice for her daughter and had a number of very, very important independent expert witness documents in support of Holly's allegations. The problem being that none of the people named, and apparently there were simply 22 of them, had ever been questioned, or hardly any of them had ever been questioned by the police about this matter. So I first of all, I was a little bit reluctant because I thought, well, I got enough on with the case I was dealing with. But I did agree in the end that I would contact Holly's mother, who had had to flee from Scotland to Shropshire as a result of the persecution she was receiving in Scotland. And when I met her, she showed me all the documentation. And it is very important for people who are just listening now and perhaps a few of the people who perhaps know about the case but have any sceptical in any kind of way, is that I took the case only because of the expert witness documents, which I could reply. If it had just been a matter of Holly making allegations with nothing to back them up whatsoever, I couldn't really have done anything about it. I really don't see what I really could have done that would be of value. But in this case, the documentary evidence was absolutely staggering. I very much doubt if I really can't speak for anybody else, but I would be astonished if there's any rape victim in the whole of the country who has so much supporting expert witness evidence as Holly Gregg had.
Robert, can I jump in there just very quickly? You're talking about medical evidence, right?
Yes, I am, yes.
Physical evidence.
Yes, I am.
And as you said, the statements and the testimony of other people, this is very important.
Oh, yes, it's not my opinion about this.
Yeah.
Obviously, I have a very high regard for Holly and for her mother, Anne, who's been so brave. But The point is that I was depending entirely on expert witness documents. Now, before I looked at the documents, I was aware of one very important thing that sounded very supportive to me indeed. And that was that as a result of Mother Anne's efforts, Holly had received a payment from the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority as a genuine victim of sexual abuse. Now, that is public money, and that is not given lightly. And although the level of proof is not the same as perhaps to convict anybody in of criminal offences, it's still quite high. And the authority really has to be satisfied that the evidence is strong enough to indicate very strongly that the person concerned really is a genuine victim rather than an alleged victim. And that is what they had decided. So that in itself, I think, was really rather significant. Now, of course, I have copies of the evidence on which they had relied, and the main evidence was from the two people who had been brought in, two experts. One was Dr. Eva Harding, who was brought in not by Anne herself, but by Nicholas Smith, who was the solicitor for Enable, who are the leading charity in Scotland who help disabled people if they have any issues. So they had actually contacted a person they trusted very much, Dr. Eva Harding, and Dr. Harding examined Holly and gave a very, very detailed professional opinion of what had happened to her. She had absolutely no doubt that she was a victim of sexual abuse. And indeed, although because of restrictions placed upon me, I can't say too much on that. But what I can say is Dr. Harding had actually named categorically two of the people who Holly had abused as definite abusers. So this came from a very high level indeed. And that document, along with a document from another leading expert, Dr. Jack Boyle of Glasgow, leading psychotherapist with great experience in dealing with victims of sexual abuse, that are also totally supportive of Holly. And while I'm talking about Dr. Boyle, who I think is generally regarded as one of the finest professionals in the whole of the country on this in this regard, there is something that I would like to read out that is important to every other case involving child abuse, and it should never be forgotten by anybody. It should be always regarded by any child coming forward, anybody representing children, and it should certainly be held in regard by the police and by the courts. Now, as I mentioned, Dr. Boyle was totally supportive of Holly, again, as Dr. Harding had been. But this is what he has to say in general, and I will just read this out. In general, the research indicates that children do not make up false stories of sexual abuse, although obtaining information from children with learning difficulties is very difficult. The perpetrator in all cases has enormous motivation to deny and make accusations such as the child is lying, misunderstands normal behavior, or has been primed by mother. So that is the opinion of Dr. Jack Boyle. And that, to me, means that any child coming forward who's been sexual abused, and I'm certainly sort of looking very hard at the child abuse inquiry in England at the present time, that children who come forward this is a top professional saying that they do not usually make up false stories of sexual abuse. So that logically means that most of the children are telling the truth. And whatever the situation, if that is how the top professional thinks about this, then it means that every single time children do come forward, then at least a thorough investigation is required. And that must apply to every case that comes before the police in this country.
You could only conclude what you did conclude based on all of that evidence. First of all, the payout, which, as you said, wasn't, you know, on the lines of the burden of proof as pertaining to a criminal case, but still very significant. Councils and authorities don't give money away, and governments don't give money away to people on a whim. Yeah. So you had that. Then you had Dr. Harding, Dr. Boyle's testimonies, all those other documents. How could you come to any other conclusion than the young girl, heaven help her, was raped?
You couldn't. The evidence is overwhelming. And it doesn't stop there. There's more. You had very good reports supporting Holly in the way that the police had not handled the case properly from two of the top professionals at the Down Syndrome Association, Susanna Seaman and Ruth Beckman. We also had, perhaps even more importantly, a report from Grampian police themselves. The investigating officer, when Holly first made her allegations in 2000, was in fact Detective Inspector Ian Alley, and the letter bore the name of the Chief Constable at that time, Andrew Brown QPM. And within the letter, it was, again, extremely supportive of Holly. And D.I. Alley told us that in the letter indicated that all the police officers who had dealt with Holly regarded her as a genuine person and a thoroughly innocent victim. And this had been supported, as D.I. Alley put his letter, by the force's forensic medical officer, a lady called Dr. Frances Kelly, who had found for certain, having examined her physically, that indeed she had been the victim of sexual abuse. So this came from the police. So this was all there. On top of that, we got some more evidence from another doctor, Dr. Paul Carter, who was the doctor at the school that Holly attended, which coincidentally was also called Beechwood School in Aberdeen. And he had also put two reports in, again, fully supporting Holly, that he had very great concerns after physically examining her, that she'd been involved in sexual abuse. And I'm really loathe to say too many things here that would embarrass
problems.
But one thing that I should say, and this in a way sickens almost everybody, is that at the age of 10, Holly had received an infection that is normally transmitted sexually. That was at the age of 10.
At the age of 10.
Yes. I actually rang Dr. Carter when I got hold of these documents. He was then practicing as a GP in the Midlands, and he confirmed everything that he put in his articles, in his reports, and he was absolutely deeply shocked that nothing had happened as a result of him putting these reports out that he sent to the head teacher of the school.
Let me do a quick recap. It's exactly 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Robert Green is on the line. Robert is a former Nobel Peace Prize nominee. He's a campaigner against child abuse. He was in Scotland a few years ago working on another case, and he was asked to look at the case of Holly Gregg, a young girl with Down syndrome, the learning disability. What he discovered when looking at the massive amount of documentation and evidence presented him by Holly's mother, including that there was a payout made to Holly because of what had happened to her, the medical evidence, the testimony by Dr. Boyle, the psychotherapist and Dr. Harding, the police accounts, all of this evidence led him to believe, to conclude that Holly was indeed a victim of rape and sexual abuse. And of course, Robert, now we move on to, you must have been, so you're flabbergasted, you're wondering how with all of that evidence, why is Holly's mother still demanding justice and accountability for her daughter? That's what you, and this is where the story moves on. Why is she not getting anywhere with this information?
Well, it's very difficult to know for sure, but obviously what is certain is that the Scottish authorities, and I will come on to this later, it includes, have covered it up at the very highest level. I do mean the very highest level, and I'm going to talk about this in detail. First Minister Alex Salmond and current First Minister Nicola Sturgeon are absolutely culpable, and they have broken the law. They've been proven to have broken the law in trying to cover up the Holly Gregg case. And I will give you some more details about this in a little while, because I think people should be doing something about it, especially if they're living in Scotland at the moment. They should be asking questions of their MPs and MSPs and possibly MEPs about why this has occurred and how it is that both Mr. Salmond and Ms. Sturgeon remain in office. Because when the truth gets out about this, and it has been forcibly concealed by the Scottish Government, then I think the people of Scotland will realise that they have been betrayed and deceived for far too long.
Robert, could it be the case, I mean, obviously Salmond and Sturgeon are not here to defend themselves. Could it be the case, and it happens all the time, I've been covering politics for donkey's years, that whatever they might or might not have done might not have been malicious, might be down to you know, not knowing all the facts about it.
Oh no! Actually, I anticipated that Ricky. Yeah. What I can say is all the documents that once I'd realised it and found that the Scottish government and the Scottish police had done nothing about it, I forwarded copies all of these to Alex Salmond, who was the First Minister at that time, and these were acknowledged as being received. So the evidence that I was looking at had been received by the offices
of the First Minister. I'm going to get hammered for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. And look, I'm not saying I think it's likely, but I've been around mainstream media and I've been around politicians. There is the possibility that Salmond and Sturgeon may not have been shown this by their respective entourages, right?
Richie, if I may stop you there.
Stop me.
There is actually a clip of me handing over the document. I'd already posted them to Mr. Salmond, and he'd done nothing. On the 1st of May 2011, Mr. Salmond arrived in Perth to be interviewed on BBC about the coming election in 2011. That was the Scottish election. And there is a clip that you can see where I actually hand him copies of his documents. They put it into his hand. I tell him who I am, and it's about the Holly Gregg case. And you will see Mr. Salmond say, "I'll take a look at these."
Fantastic,
so there
Robert.
It is.
There's brilliant stuff. So you handed them to him. So there's no excuse.
Oh, absolutely.
He has them.
There is no question about his culpability in this. He knows all about it, and he has done nothing.
And you've never heard from them since.
Yes. So anyway, just before we get back to that, I'm going to read you some documents about
Just before you do, Robert, obviously, because you've handed him the documents and we know that, and that's you know, a matter of historical fact and record. We will, of course, write to the former First Minister and ask him, has he read the information that you gave him? We know you gave it to him. And if he has read it, could he give some response, give some answer, give us some indication of what he thinks about that information? It's incumbent upon us now as a semi-decent programme to do that. So we will do it. Now, I'll shut up and you can talk about the documents.
Yes. Well, actually, as it happens, I think while we're just on this subject, rather than go off it and come back to it again a little bit later, I think it's probably best if I give you all the details now, because there's far more than that. On the 3rd of June, the very respectable magazine called The Firm, it's a legal magazine, so it's only usually read by people in the legal profession in Scotland, gave a headline, exclusive, Information Commissioner Forces Government Response to Holly Gregg Inquiries. And this was published, it's a public document and so forth. And it makes a point that on the 26th of May 2011, the whole of the Scottish ministers, of course led by Alex Salmond at that time, but included Nicola Sturgeon and the current deputy leader, John Swinney, were all found to have breached sections 10(1) and 21 of the Freedom of Information Act for repeatedly refusing to answer questions about the Holly Gregg case. You couldn't have anything stronger.
No, you can't.
Now, following that, you would have thought the Scottish Government would do something about it, but they didn't. And they ignored the Information Commissioner's ruling and until the 11th of July, when they faced the criminal charge, all the ministers, including Nicola Sturgeon, faced the potential criminal charge of contempt of court for failing to address the ruling that the Information Commissioner, Mr. Kevin Dunnion, had made. And this is also there on the 11th of July 2011. You'll actually see an article again from The Firm, and the heading is First Minister in Missing Records Riddle Over Holly Gregg Abuse Allegations. It couldn't be more clear. It doesn't end there, because I actually wrote to Mr. Salmond's office in 2014. I kept at it all the time because I knew he was trying to cover things up. And I actually managed to get a copy of a letter that came my way from Mr. Salmond's office, whilst he was First Minister, to his own constituency secretary, Mr. Neil Bailey. And this is what Mr. Salmond said. It was issued by his deputy private secretary, a lady called Lynn Forsyth. and it reads as follows. Dear Mr. Bailey, thank you for forwarding your letter received by Robert Green on the 14th of January 2014, in which he states that Mr. Salmon did not respond to the Information Commissioner's request for information over his conduct over the Holly Gregg case. I would like to assure you that the protection of children in Scotland is a key priority for the Scottish Government. I would also like to assure you that the Scottish Government complied with the Information Commissioner's request for information on the 28th of January 2011. Now, clearly, that has to be incorrect.
Yeah, that's a lawyer, right?
The ruling was made on the 26th of May, 2011. And I got subsequently got a letter back from the Information Commissioner, and this was dated, coincidentally, 26th of May, but in 2014. And just remember that the First Minister is telling his own constituency secretary he complied with the Information Commissioner's request on the 28th of January, 2011. And this is what the Information Commissioner said to me. I've got the letter in front of me. As I've indicated previously, the information was requested on the 28th of January 2011. The requester subsequently sent a reminder on the 13th of February 2011. As no response had been received, the requester asked the ministers to carry out a review of their failure to respond on the 10th of March 2011. It could not be clearer. Mr. Salmon has even lied to his own constituency secretary about this appalling case.
It's staggering stuff, this.
Particularly
for people who haven't heard it before, of course.
He has been involved in the media. Why that was not the number one story in the Scottish papers? Can you imagine the First Minister and all the cabinet coming breaking the law over the rape of a disabled girl and facing possible criminal charges, come within 24 hours of being charged, and it doesn't get in the press? Why didn't get in the press? Because Mr. Salmon's solicitor, a man called Peter Watson of Levy and McRae, threatened broadcasters and editors all over Scotland that this case had to be covered up at all costs.
The Scottish people
were not to be told what the Scottish, their own top elected representatives, had done over this horrible rape case.
Now, Robert, there's documentary evidence to show that Salmon's solicitor contacted the broadcasters. This is a fact, right?
That is the case. That we have actually got a letter to say that there's been contact. Although I have to say, I won't embarrass the people concerned. I have spoken to three editors about this, and they all confirmed that that this was indeed the case, that they had been threatened.
That they'd been told basically you're not to talk about this,
to investigate this. Absolutely. This case was so hot that they felt that the Scottish people had to be kept in the dark over it at all costs.
Now, this is what's really interesting about this. And when I say interesting, I don't want to sound heartless, because we say interesting and it's about a young girl's life and her mother's life. So when I say interesting, I'm not being in any way heartless. But what, you know, from a purely, you know, academic or a purely journalistic point of view, what's really interesting about this then is later on what happened to you. But you're coming to understand that what was really going on here was a wider paedophile network, a network of individuals that were pandering and passing around children. Now, you, Your Excellency, I don't have to repeat this for your benefit, but for the audience's benefit, I want to mention that at this point, Robert won't be mentioning any names. We're not going to be doing that for his own sake and for our sake. But we're going to talk about your learning that there was a wider, deeper conspiracy at work in that area, abusing children. Talk to us about that.
Well, I believe it was. I think the actions in trying to cover up the case were so drastic, and then the subsequent actions about throwing me into prison were an indication of that. They had to stop me at all costs, because they had to be sort of powerful individuals involved in this case. Otherwise, the draconian actions taken against me would make no sense. What I did, and I talked about this, I'm just going back chronologically a little bit now. In 2009, on the 8th of September 2009, I managed to persuade, after a lot of pressure, the Scottish police to reinvestigate the case. And again, I repeat, they had all these expert documents in front of them. They know they knew the Criminal Injury Compensation Authority had paid Holly out. So they had all this evidence. They'd had they got the police letter as well. That was all there in the possession of Scottish police when they interviewed Holly on the 8th of September 2009. I was present. And I'd like people just to think about this, because I'm sure this is something that most people have never experienced in their lives, and I hope that they never do. I listened to Holly Gregg being interviewed for 3.5 hours by the police. It was held in Shrewsbury because the Scottish police came down, but because they were living in Shropshire at the time, they came down to interview Holly. And the interviewing officer was DC Lisa Jane Evans. And over that period, Holly was absolutely magnificent in naming and giving locations, precise locations, of the people who she alleged had assaulted her. And of course, by this time, the police themselves had a record to show that the police themselves regarded her as an entirely innocent victim. So they knew at that time, if there's a victim, there's got to be at least one perpetrator, at least one perpetrator.
Robert, let me jump back in. Tell us about that testimony, without obviously, of course, again, naming names. How did it sound to you listening? How did she sound in terms of what she was saying, the credibility of it? Did it sound natural to you? Was it absolutely something that you got? Go ahead.
Yes, that's true, Richie. You see, I'd heard Holly. Holly had been on, done a few interviews before, including some with the media, with the BBC, who were going to do programmes about it until they got threatened. But Holly was very precise over that time. She does have speech difficulties and she has some hearing difficulties, but she was very, very precise about locations, what people look like and so forth. Just taking into account that she does have some speech difficulties, but she was quite clear about everything that had gone on and named people very clearly, and also named 7 other children she had witnessed. She said she had witnessed being assaulted.
This is unbelievable stuff, this. Again, for somebody who hasn't heard it before.
Story.
Staggering stuff, yeah. I just want to do a quick, very quick recap. 29 minutes to the top of the year. If you've just joined the programme, Robert Green, as the anti-child abuse campaigner, is on the line, former Nobel Peace Prize nominee. We're talking about Holly Gregg, the staggering case, the unbelievable amount of evidence to suggest that this girl was raped repeatedly, that she was raped by many people, by several people. The doctor's testimony, the psychotherapist's testimony, all the police evidence, everything that we've talked about here, all of this documentary evidence, and even evidence that suggests, and we know that Robert did pass this information to former Scottish First Minister Alex Salmond, who hasn't, to this point anyway, come back to Robert or addressed any of this. Neither has Nicola Sturgeon. Why they've done that, we don't know. We can speculate, and Robert has speculated because he thinks it's part of a wider cover-up. This is staggering, staggering stuff. It's staggering stuff, this. For people who haven't heard it before, I came to this information through davidicke.com when David was reporting on what happened to Robert. Even the interviews with the police that you're describing, Robert, harrowing stuff. I mean, it must have been harrowing stuff to listen to. It made you even more convinced of the credibility of the story and of Holly. And,
I had no doubt about the credibility because the evidence was already all there. Not just what Holly said. As I say, it's all the experts who supported Holly. You know, all independent of each other. They were all giving the information, having examined Holly and all the rest of it, physically and psychologically and so forth. They've given all that evidence and everybody absolutely supported her. So who am I to argue with top professionals who have had looked at her and investigated her? I'm not qualified in any of these matters at all, but they are, and they're the top people in their profession, and they're acting professionally and impartially, and that was the opinion of all of them. So there's, when I say about the fact that the no rape victim could possibly have more supporting evidence than Holly, and of course, you know, we quite clearly we have evidence that there was a very serious cover up at the highest level. Now, basically, what happened to me is not important in comparison to what happened to Holly, but in 2009 we did get after this detailed interview with Holly and the police having all the documents, and by this time the First Minister having all the documents. On the 4th of December 2009, I got a letter, or Anne, Holly's mother, got a letter to say that they weren't going to do, the police weren't going to do anything about it because of insufficient evidence. Insufficient evidence.
Staggering stuff. Staggering that, for you to read that, right? With the tranche, yes, of documentary evidence, right?
Yes. Yes. Now, what happened was that also the letter said that the independent counsel had given advice that they couldn't go ahead on this. Now, I'd already got an idea that that independent counsel was none other than the head of the legal system at the time, Elise Angelini. So on around the 19th of December, having had a few discussions with Anne, I decided to ring up the Crown Office, which Elise Angelini was at the time in charge of, and I got through to a lady who's the head, I think, of the Sexual Abuse Unit, Kathleen Harper, QC. And I said, I can't believe that this case has been blocked. There's so much overwhelming evidence, and people have been named quite clearly, and named clearly by the experts, who all certainly talked about at least one of the people as a prime suspect, and nothing has happened. How can this be? And I said, who is this independent counsel who had told the police, apparently seemed to have told the police to back off on this? And she said, after I put a bit of pressure on her, she didn't want to give me the answer. But after a little while, she said twice to me, she said, it was the Lord Advocate. It was the Lord Advocate. That Lord Advocate was Elise Angelini, who, I might add, was actually the head of the Procurator Fiscal, the main prosecutor in Aberdeen, back in 2000 and 2001, when Holly first reported the abuses. So in no way could she be an independent person, because she was looking at a case in which she had previously been involved in.
Well, she had to recuse herself because it could reflect very badly on her if it was to come to light what happened to Holly. Questions would have been levelled. Why did you not proceed with the prosecution at that time?
Exactly.
It just gets even filthier and murkier the more you go into it.
In fact, we've since had Angelini, of course, told the court when I was arrested and so forth that she had nothing to do with the cases, and we've got documentary evidence to say that she had said categorically she had nothing to do with the case, which was a lie. And fortunately, after I'd twice been thrown into prison, on the 28th of April 2014, the former Justice Secretary, Kenny McCaskill, and he was the Justice Secretary at the time, attended a public meeting in Perth, and one of the people there, the very brave Scott, who's done wonderful work, called David Scott, posted a question to him in the hall, which was recorded, and he asked him a question about who was responsible over the Holly Gregg case. And Mr. McCaskill, to everybody's astonishment, said it was Elise Angelini. She decided the allegations were false and this case should not be taken forward, which only corroborated what Kathleen Harper, QC, had told me several years earlier. Consequently, Mr. McCaskill actually wrote to my MP, David Mowat, concerning in relation to that, and later I had a letter in writing from the Criminal Directorate in Scotland, confirming exactly what Mr. McCaskill had said in Perth on the 28th of April 2014. So we have all that. I mean, it is just absolutely staggering, the documentary evidence that we have to support this.
How difficult was it for you? I know you're very, very decent, and you're not, you've never, I've again looked at what, I spent a lot of time today going over things, and there's no sense of you in any way trying to get any publicity for yourself. There's no sense of that at all. None of it.
Can I finish that point?
Just let me finish that point just very quickly, because it's an important one to make in an era when independent media people often use people like Melanie and Holly and others as their props to further themselves. This is not you. And what's staggering about that is you've never looked for any sympathy, or you've never, you know, screamed from the rooftops about your own incarceration. But how difficult was it, though, Robert? You know, to be put in prison for asking questions, really?
It was hard, but because I got incarcerated because I couldn't get any politicians to support me on this. I was obviously trying everything to get it. We did get some publicity from the News of the World, the old News of the World in Scotland. An article was published on the 19th of April 2009 by James Mulholland. And the Shropshire Star, which was Holly and Anne's local paper, also did some useful pieces. And there were some useful pieces from my own local paper, the Warrington Guardian. But generally speaking, the media seemed to be frightened about doing anything like this. The BBC promised to do something about it and were warned off. That was back in 2009. And what I did when I found that the Scottish police were not going to do anything is I stood for Parliament. I decided to stand for Parliament in Aberdeen South. I'd never been to Aberdeen before, and up for the 2010 general election. And I subsequently, on February 2010, there's a 2010 general election. Because nobody knew me and nobody knew about the case, because there'd been more or less a blackout on the Scottish media on it, I went to Aberdeen and couldn't get any of the other candidates to speak about it. I went to Aberdeen and I said I'd have a press conference. Any media want to come, any people in the public would like to come and talk to me, ask me questions, see whether, if they like me or believe what I was saying, please come forward and talk to me. And I made it plain that I would be at 10:30 in the morning outside Marks and Spencer's on Union Street, which is the main street in Aberdeen. But just before I got there, I was suddenly pounced on by two plainclothes police officers. They put handcuffs on me, threw me in the back of a police car, and then took me to the police station. And I was held in solitary confinement without any legal representation for 4 days and charged.
That's disgusting, isn't it?
It is astounding. I asked for legal representation. They said they were going to charge me. And I said, well, surely my human rights are being infringed here. I'm in an alien country with no one to, no witness, no independent witness, no solicitor. And one of the policemen made the statement that has lived with me ever since. And he looked at me coldly and said, "This is Scotland. Don't you come here talking about human rights. We don't have them here."
You had to listen to that sort of garbage.
Yep. So there we go. That was the first time. And I have to say, I kept at it. And again, I was grabbed from my home in Cheshire 2 years later and thrown into prison again. That was the year that began, because I was pursuing Mr. Salmon for his failures, basically. And at the time when I was in prison, that was the time when I got the commendation to be the Nobel Peace Prize, which you mentioned earlier on. Now, I'm not going to read about it because it's a bit flattering. It embarrassed me a little bit. But I will read you some of the points that were made, not necessarily to do with me, but because of the failures of the Scottish establishment. And I'll just briefly give you a paragraph here, which I think is very important. It comes from a senior member of the House of Commons whose identity I still don't know. I'm not supposed to know, and I quite honestly, I can tell you truthfully, I still do not know who it is. But this is what he or she had to say. "Even as I write this nomination, Robert Green is in prison in Scotland, having been arrested for at least the third time by Aberdeen Police on the 13th of February 2014. These repeated arrests have been despite the fact that all Robert Green has campaigned for is for Aberdeen Police to do their job and properly investigate Holly Gregg's allegation of child sex abuse. A matter of great urgency, since whoever abused Holly Gregg is likely to be still extensively abusing other children. This is the word of the MP." He also goes on to say that the disturbing pattern of repeated arrests of Robert Green by the Aberdeen Police suggests that the arrests are a means of obstructing and stopping Mr. Green's campaign for the abusers of Holly Gregg to be brought to justice. "Contrast the speed and intensity with which the Aberdeen Police have pursued cases against Robert Green with their sheer reluctance to interview the suspects and victims named by Holly Gregg. Consider also the fact that if Holly Gregg's allegations are true, then there is a fairly large number of child abusers who are left free to continue abusing other children in and around Aberdeen and perhaps further afield." Those are the words of the MP who recommended, who put me forward for the award. He couldn't be more blunt, could he?
Couldn't be any more blunt. And of course, our listeners will want to know, obviously, a couple of important questions. One is the well-being and the whereabouts, if not geographically, but whereabouts in terms of, are they okay? Are they comfortable? What about Holly and her mother today?
I understand they are. I believe that they are living in Shropshire and are in safety at the moment. So I hope that the ordeal for them is finally over. But of course, they have not obtained justice yet. And I have to say that throughout the campaign, when I was helping Anne a lot, Anne was very unselfish about this. Of course, she wanted to protect her daughter first of all. But she said, the main thing is, she says, Holly, to a certain extent, is safe. We hope nothing will happen to her again. But I do not want any other mothers to have to go through what I have had to go through. These people should be brought to justice.
Can I just say something which has been on my mind when we've been talking about this?
Yes.
Because of, we've covered forced adoption on the programme. Isn't Anne somewhat fortunate? And this is in no way now to cast any doubt on Anne's, what Anne has said, because I believe it, having looked into it. But isn't she lucky that Holly wasn't taken away from her?
Yes, I guess she was, actually. There is a little bit more that I can't say on publicly about this, but let us say she was lucky, though there was an attempt to take Holly away from her, which was very sinister indeed, I have to say. But I can only say a very limited amount about that because of legal reasons.
Robert, you believe, don't you? And I've interviewed people on this programme who share your belief. You believe that currently today, very early into the year 2017...
Yes. Hello?
Yeah, sorry, something happened there.
Yes.
There was an extraordinarily loud noise on the line all of a sudden.
Oh, right. Oh, well, it's probably it may be the Scottish police or somebody representing Mr. Salmond who doesn't like what I had to say.
Well, that's staggering because...
It probably isn't.
Do you know what? I'm going to declare this. That was a third-party interference on this phone call.
Right.
There's no doubt in my mind, right about when I was going to ask you. And it nearly blew the ears off me because I'm wearing cans, obviously.
Right.
And it's nearly blown my ears off.
Right.
I'm a bit absolutely shocked there. I've never experienced that before. But right.
Expect any dirty tricks from the Scottish authorities.
That's extraordinary. I wonder did our listeners hear that, if they did tweet me. But before, I don't want to waste any more time on that for the moment.
Yes.
You believe that currently, right now, as you and I talk, there exists an international and a national paedophile ring with very important and very powerful people working within it, abusing children and rendering children, taking children from one place to another for the purposes of abusing them, and that the vast majority of people in the United Kingdom have no idea about the scale of that. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, that is so, and I think that is probably the case. I think it's difficult to actually say that that is not the situation, because obviously there have been great pressure on all sorts of people who've tried to speak up. Look at the Jimmy Savile case. Nobody dared to see. He was at it for 50 years, by all accounts, and all the people who worked with him seemed to know about it, but not one person had the guts to speak out about him when he was alive. Nobody in the mainstream media made these allegations whilst he was alive. And the only person of any standing who had the guts to speak out was a person who is often mocked by individuals in the mainstream media, and that person is David Icke. He spoke out whilst Savile was alive, and he was the only well-known person to have the courage to do so. And if you hear about anybody trying to put David down, just remind them about that. Where were you when Jimmy Savile was raping children?
Not to mention, of course, not to mention he named Edward Heath and George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, that's another issue. I know he did mention that too. What I should say is, in the Aberdeen area, there have been other cases, and cases actually taking place now where the similar kind of cover-ups are taking place. I would ask people to look at the terrible case of the Doherty family. I would ask people to look at the case of the disappearance of Sean Ritchie, a mysterious young man disappeared on the Halloween night in 2014 in an area very close to where the Doherty family reported likely sexual abuse. There's been the persecution of a devoted father in Aberdeen called Malcolm Ogilvie, and there's also been the murder of Claire Webster. all in this same area, and there are other issues as well, but those are just four which I would say would be extremely suspicious indeed in the way that those cases have been dealt with and are being dealt with at the present time.
We'll get you back on in the near future and we'll talk about those cases. We're just about running out of time now. I want to remind our listeners, Robert Green has been on the line to us, and we've been talking about Melanie Shaw and what happened to Melanie last week and where she is and why hasn't there been any announcement by the so-called authorities as to what she was convicted of, and of course Beechwood Children's Home. Robert's been talking about the Holly Gregg case, which is a national scandal. There's no doubt about that. And I'm glad that he's come on the programme to talk about that. And of course the wider issue of paedophile rings operating here, there and everywhere, rendering children and abusing children, and doing so, it would appear at the moment, with immunity from prosecution.
Yes, well, this, if I can just, I know we're running out of time now, Richard, but I should just mention some of the other quite important, again, which shows the strength of the case. On the 20th of February 2013, I was invited down to Operation Yew Tree's headquarters in East London. And I was interviewed by two officers, very good officers, called DS Nick Troon and DS Sean Richardson. They were, seemed to be very well briefed on the Holly Gregg case. They wanted to go over all the facts with me. Of course, I gave them copies of all the key documents. They actually wanted to investigate again in Scotland. It wasn't just the when I got the reinvestigation in 2009. In 2013, the same thing happened again, but this time it was the police in England who wanted to investigate. But the officers told me that in order to set up an investigation in Scotland, they needed the permission of the Scottish authorities. And I said, well, that's wonderful if you get it, but do not forget that the current First Minister is implicated in this case. I think you will be blocked. And that is exactly what,
and that's what happened.
The Scottish authorities refused the officers from Operation Yew Tree permission to go ahead and investigate Holly's case. That goes to show how bad things are, and the support that we that we've had, even from the police here in Britain. I can't criticise them for their effort, for the lack of effort.
Robert, that's brilliant. Just finally, in the 20 seconds we have left, where should people go to find out more about what you've been doing?
Well, there are a lot of things that they can look at. I don't have a blog of my own, so there's nothing that I control, and that's deliberate at the present time. But there are quite a lot of things. I mean, you often find lots of things on the UK column. You've been very good. I know David has been very good in many ways, David Icke. And Holly Gregg Justice is worth having a look at as well. I say none of these are controlled by me in any way at all, but there's quite a lot of information on those. If you just want to read about some of the things I've been talking about, many of these documents are in the public domain, and if you want to just satisfy yourself just having heard me talk about it, you can actually read a lot of these things for yourself.
Great stuff. Yeah,
but I would urge everybody to do what they can regarding Mr. Salmon and Mr. Sturgeon. I think there are two people who, it's probably the only case with the paper with you can actually absolutely certainly tie in the national leaders.
Well, we'll certainly be asking them.
I do not think either of those people are fit to be in the offices that they now hold.
We will certainly be asking them to explain why they haven't, answered the documents that they were given, why they haven't made a statement about the documents given to them by you on this case. Thanks for coming on the programme. I have no doubt you'll be on again soon. And sincere congratulations to all the to you for all the work you've done and sticking up for people like Anne and Holly and others. I really mean that. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Richie. That's very kind of you. And thank you to all the listeners.
Fantastic. Robert Green on the line to us there from Warrington. And as he said there, his work is documented. You just need to put his name and Holly Gregg into a search engine. Excuse me. And you will find out, or you will find links to his work. Like I said, if you go to davidicke.com and you put Holly Gregg into the search engine, everything that's ever been put onto davidicke.com is archived. So you'll get loads and loads of links to information there. It's exactly, what is it? Coming up for 7 minutes to the top of the hour. Quick break.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE 9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Welcome back to the program. Thanks for all the tweets. This, a very strange thing happened there just before we finished with Robert there. And it could be innocent, I suppose. Maybe I overreacted a little bit, but it was so strange and it was so loud in my ear. But it sounded like something cut into the conversation, and it sounded a bit like an engine. And then it sounded like somebody was whistling. I'm going to obviously listen back with great interest after the program. And it didn't sound in any way natural, though. How bizarre. I suppose because of the nature of what he's talking about, Robert, because of the lengths that he's gone to keep this in the public consciousness, to keep this in the public eye, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he doesn't have enemies who want to mess him around or spook him in some way. But yeah, that was certainly bizarre. That's pretty much it for the programme for Tuesday. Thanks for listening to it. Do stay with our broadcast partners, fabradiointernational.com, alternatecurrentradio.com. Great programmes on both of those stations. And bookmark davidicke.com/headlines, where you'll get an angle on the big stories of the day that, of course, you don't get on the alternative media. Really important, that is. So I've not heard back thus far from the people at the campaign against anti-Semitism. They've not come back to me to disagree or to not come on the programme tomorrow. I've invited them on the programme tomorrow. I will give them some time. I'll give them till around about midday or early afternoon tomorrow before I'll have to put somebody else in the programme. So we'll see. And as I said, I'll let you know if anything happens. Now, Linda Moulton Howe will be on the programme tomorrow. She's a part of the big awakening event, which also features Eric von Daniken, coming soon to Manchester. She's a fascinating woman, is Linda. She joins the programme tomorrow for an extended chat. And as I said, hopefully somebody from the campaign against anti-Semitism will come on to have a natter with me and a debate about what constitutes anti-Semitism and, well, what they've been saying about David Icke and the Worldwide Wake Up Tour. 3.5 minutes at the top of the year. I'm going to leave you and love you with the Arcade Fire. Thank you again to Robert Green. Thanks to him. And thanks to you for listening. I'll be back with you at 8 p.m. GMT tomorrow, Wednesday, for another Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. Until then, look after yourselves and one another. I've been Richie Allen. Bye for now. Thank you. Bye now.